Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome everyone to the August 10th, 2023 webinar. My name is Michael Kramer, and I am presenting today on behalf of Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation. I am the Calibration and Inspection Program Manager at PJLA. And today we are going to go over the requirements in 17025-2017 for corrective action. So corrective action, so what are we referring to? Corrective action is an activity that shall be used to stop a reoccurrence of a non-conformance. Key there is reoccurrence. So we're gonna dive into that a little bit further here. Corrective action has to be initiated when a problem exists. Remedial action can easily be confused with corrective action. Remedial action or correction is taken to rectify the mistake. Corrective action is an action taken to eliminate the non-conformance and to prevent a reoccurrence. Look at a correction as put a Band-Aid on the issue, just addressing the issue at hand. We're going to look further and actually take corrective action and hopefully put something in place to prevent a reoccurrence. So sources of corrective action. This list is by all means no all encompassing. So corrective actions can come about from internal audits, external audits, from customer complaints, from non-conforming work, perhaps from internal sources within your organization, or perhaps through your customer feedback that you actively seek. So three things on here I want to highlight. These are three separate items within the standard. Of course, we have corrective action, which we're talking about today. We have complaints. Complaints may or may not lead to corrective action. Same thing with non-conforming work. You could have non-conforming work. Corrective action could be put into place to prevent a reoccurrence for non-conforming work. So looking at the actual requirements within the standards, 871, when a non-conformancy occurs, a laboratory shall react to the nonconformity as applicable, take actions to control it, and address the consequences. So this is pretty much correcting it. So an example perhaps would be a customer calls, hey, our test report, calibration report, there's a wrong serial number, wrong sample number, wrong date on here. Sure, you can correct it easy enough. Remedial action, make changes to the report, send out the amended report. However, this does not prevent a reoccurrence. So if this is an isolated instance, then correction may be sufficient. Looking at the next requirement under 871B, when a nonconformity occurs, a laboratory shall evaluate the need for action to eliminate the causes of the nonconformity in order that it does not reoccur, or occur elsewhere. By reviewing and analyzing the nonconformity, determining the causes of the nonconformity, and determining if similar nonconformities exist or could potentially exist. So after the correction and expanding on the a report going out with errors on it, for example, if this is perhaps the third or fourth time this month that you've gotten a call from a customer regarding errors on the test or calibration report. At this point, perhaps corrective action would need to be taken, and a real cause of the issue at hand would need to be determined. So perhaps looking down a little further than just the issue at hand, a cause analysis. So we're going to look at some examples of those here in a little bit. And what we're referring to there. So instead of just reissuing the report again, take formal corrective action, doing a cause analysis, which perhaps may need to look down a little bit further and look into the review and authorization of reports. Put something in place down at that level to prevent these errors from reoccurring. This is a graphic I've used it before. I think it pretty much depicts what we're referring to with correction and corrective action. If you could picture a dandelion, a Johnson grass, a weed growing out on your lawn there, and it's easy enough to go and pull that weed, make it look nice again, not obvious from the street that, hey, you got weeds in your yard. But that's not going to prevent a reoccurrence. You can come back next week and that same week could be sprouting again. So this picture is depicting the roots. It used to be specified in 2017 root cause analysis. Now it's causes because it could perhaps be more than one. Need to dig down a little bit further than just a superficial weed there and get down to the roots. Perhaps extract them, kill those roots, in order to prevent that weed from sprouting its head again. All right, 871C, when a nonconformity occurs, the laboratory shall implement any actions needed. So you did your cause analysis. Hopefully you've taken corrective action to address the root cause or the causes. Now we need to put the corrective action to work. So the necessary conditions for the corrective action should be clearly defined. The laboratory management should be confident about the effectiveness and the performance of the corrective action. So under 871D, when a nonconformance occurs, the laboratory shall review the effectiveness of the corrective action taken. So in other words, the results of the corrective action shall be monitored for determining the effectiveness of the corrective action. Monitoring should verify the successful completion of the identified action and assess the effectiveness of the actions taken. A little hourglass there, trying to depict, hey, you need to have some time pass before you make that determination. As an assessor, when we at PJLA, we have nonconformances. Yep, we identify them. Organizations are expected to take appropriate corrective action. So we do require the corrective action report. One thing I don't like to see is, hey, you're taking the corrective action and you determine it was already effective on the same day that you have taken it. So one thing I like to sort of run by folks is, yep, corrective action, you've taken it. During the management review, maybe a good time to go back and look to determine whether or not it's been effective. That's a required input for the management review. Good time to, hey, not just look at, hey, what corrective actions were taken during the course of perhaps the year since the previous management review, but has the corrective action been effective, or hey, has since we've implemented this corrective action, has there been any reoccurrences? So like that, you know, just as a recommendation, perhaps save that part of the corrective action, perhaps until the management review when you go back and you need to review them anyway. Risk and opportunity. When a nonconformance occurs, a laboratory shall update risk and opportunities determined during the planning if necessary. So when the 17025 was revised in 2017. It requires the lab to plan and implement actions to address risk and opportunities, i.e. Section 8.5 of the standard. I always specify, typically during this part of the corrective action process, lab should perhaps incorporate asking itself, are there any risk or opportunities that were presented during the course of implementing this corrective action? So a lab may have different processes for assigning risk levels of corrective actions, of course, depending on their severity. For example, a single lapse versus a total breakdown, a major nonconformance as opposed to a minor nonconformance. Corrective action should be implemented accordingly. Still under 871F, when a nonconformity occurs, the laboratory shall make changes to the management system if necessary. So this is your ISO IEC 17025 2017 compliant quality management system. Perhaps corrective action would have been implemented that may prompt an update of a procedure. Perhaps a form for creating a record was established as corrective action. You need to look at your quality management system, see if it needs to be addressed anywhere in there or referenced within your existing quality management system. In 872, corrective action shall be appropriate to the effects of the nonconformity encountered. So I said, during this phase, you're looking at the final product of your testing, calibration, sampling, medical type lab. And determine, hey, what was the possible impact on your end product, which is the laboratory results that was provided to your clients. Records under 873, the laboratory shall retain records as evidence of the nature of the nonconformity, causes, and any subsequent action taken, and the results of the corrective action. So records are needed to support compliance. This should support that a nonconformance was identified, cause analysis completed. Potential corrective actions may be recorded and identified, selected and implemented. And then, of course, that the corrective action was monitored and hopefully determined to be effective. All right, that's it as far as the requirements within the standard. Just want to look a little bit more, which I think is the most important process in the corrective action protocol that 17025 establishes, and that's determining the cause analysis. This is something that, hey, there's multiple methods. You can Google root cause analysis methods, and you'll be amazed how much you would pop up on your screen as far as documentation references. I'm going to look at a few examples here. However, a root cause or cause analysis is specified now in the 2017 standards should be performed as soon as possible after the error or variance occurred. Otherwise, important details may be missed. All of the personnel involved in the lab error should be involved in the analysis. Without all parties present, discussion may lead to fictionalization or speculation that will dilute the facts. As a cause analysis tool or root cause would be the fishbone or Ishikawa or cause and effect diagram. So this will group causes into categories that may include things like P people, measurement, methods, material, environments, and machines. The Fishtow diagram forces you to consider all possible causes of a problem instead of focusing on the most obvious one. Here, causes are grouped into several categories to easily identify the correct sources of the variation. So here you can establish, you can eliminate some of these groups. Perhaps you can expand and find more than one cause to the nonconformity. Categories are very broad and may include things like people or environment. After grouping the categories, we break down into smaller groups. For example, under people, perhaps we might look at considering potential root cause factors like leadership, staffing, or training. As we dig deeper into causes and sub-causes, questioning each branch, we get closer to the sources of the issue. We can use this method to eliminate unrelated categories and independent and identify correlated factors and likely root causes. For the sake of simplicity, carefully consider the categories before creating a diagram. Another method is simple brainstorming. So this should have a facilitator. The person facilitating the brainstorming session should have two rules. First, to assure that the steps are properly executed. And second, assure that the discussion stays on topic in regards to finding the root cause of the problem you are trying to solve. In addition to all the great ideas you can get from brainstorming session, this is true, it can also benefit you with regards to company politics. This is the case because if individuals are involved in the brainstorming session, they'll be more likely to support the resulting action items because they were involved in the process that created the solution. Lastly, I want to hit on the five whys. And I can say, and as an assessor for those labs that I see, have adopted a root cause analysis process or cause analysis process. This is probably the most popular one, speaking on my behalf that I see. It's called the five whys. So sometimes you can think of this as the annoying toddler approach. You answer a question, why? So for every answer to a why question, it'll be followed up with an additional deeper okay but why question. If we look back at that root, sort of digging down from that weed, getting down to the bottom roots there. So five is an arbitrary number. The theory is that after asking why five times, you will arrive at the root cause. The root cause has been identified when asking why doesn't provide any more useful information. Here's an example. We have an issue here. Material was not reached on time. When I actually go 60. So if you can follow along with me, why material was not reached on time? Answer, because it was dispatched too late. Why was the material dispatched too late? Material was not ready on time. Why was material not ready on time? Material specifications reached late. Why specifications was released late? Material specification was not sent with purchase order. Why specification was not sent with purchase order? Purchase person missed to send it together. Why the person was missed to send it together? Hey, you were down 6 deep, a gap. Gap found in the induction process of the new employee. So hopefully we can nip it in the bud there and address it there after our 6Y, take corrective action to prevent this issue from reoccurring. Another one here, an employee fell and was injured during the first shift startup. Why? There was an oil spill on the floor to the machining department. Okay, we could stop there. We could mop it up. We corrected the issue at hand. So, hey, of course, we're going to correct that. But we don't want this to happen again. So we're going to ask why. A seal in machine 2 deteriorated and began cracking and leaked oil. Why? The seal material was not robust to the application. Why not? Lower cost seals purchased from a new supplier. Why? Seal material was not specified in service manuals, so low cost seals were issued. So we can ask why again, but I think we just answered it right there. So under here, hey, we need to set some specifications for these seals when we order them. We need to obviously replace the ones we have and be specific with the ordering, not just the lowest cost. Why? Because we want to prevent an issue like an employee falling and injuring themselves again. All right, that will conclude today's webinar. Bear with me one moment. So I'll give it some time here. But if anything regarding today's topic, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in your box. Okay, do all corrections need to be entered into a corrective action log if these are isolated or one-time event and corrected immediately? If you have implemented a corrective action log, I would recommend that you include it in the corrective action log and show that it was corrected. Reason being, sort of like the example I gave with the report. Yep, you can correct it. If it happened again, you can go back to the corrective action log and you can see, hey, we corrected this once before. Might prompt you for taking formal corrective action. So I would recommend, if you have established a corrective action log, to include the corrections as well, to detect any trends, just in case you need to implement corrective action. Okay, again, this webinar is being recorded. Feel free to go back, or perhaps you had a colleague that may have missed it. Go back and listen to this webinar. Like I said, during assessments, that's one source of corrective action. And excuse me, as an assessor or even as an internal auditor, and I say this often, I love when I see an internal audit and they have a lot of findings. I wouldn't say a lot of findings. They have findings on themselves and they've taken good corrective action and done a cause analysis. Makes everybody's job a lot easier. Including the assessor, including your organization from having the non-conforming work repeat itself. So try to take it to heart that, you know, when you have corrective action, if it comes from a PJLA assessment or a customer complaint, hey, you don't want it to reoccur. Go ahead and do a good cause analysis, do the fishbone diagram or the five whys, and put something in place to prevent a reoccurrence. Not just because, you know, the standard requires it, but it benefits all parties involved, including, you know, maybe your clients, whereas a non-conformance will adversely affect the laboratory results. Okay, not a whole lot of questions. Hopefully I gone over everything sufficient for you all. Want to thank everybody for joining us this morning. Feel free to visit the PJLA website for future webinars. And maybe if you're on our mailing list, email notifications for upcoming webinars. Enjoy the rest of your day. Again, thank you for joining us.